afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I am your host and avid pet owner and lover, Shelley Wade. Today, we are talking with you about you and your pets, including how to choose the right pet for you and your family, how to take care of your pet through regular checkups, diet, and exercise, and how to take care of your aging pet and what to do when your animal gets sick, and much more. My guest today is Anchorage veterinarian Shannon DeRuzzo. Shannon received her degree in veterinary medicine from Colorado State University, and before joining Pet Stop, a veterinary clinic in South Anchorage, she was a relief veterinarian for numerous hospitals around the state. And her special interests include pocket pets, which we're going to talk about, and reptiles. So we encourage you, listeners, to share your stories, comments, and questions with us as we cover this very exciting topic. So you can reach us inside Anchorage by calling 550-8433, outside of Anchorage at 1-888-353-5752, or email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, welcome, Shannon.
Well, thank you so much, Shelley.
Great to have you here.
Oh, it's great to be here.
So you have been practicing veterinary medicine for how long?
Just over 10 years.
Over 10 years. Okay, and you're currently at a clinic in South Anchorage?
Yep, it's called the Pet Stop.
Okay, so in your intro there, we heard mention of this idea of pet pockets or pocket pets and reptiles. So we were hoping to hear from you. Tell us a little bit about what that means, the pocket pets piece.
Pockets pets are actually what you think of as a very small animal that would actually fit in a pocket, but usually they're not. Usually they're kept in an aquarium or cage, and they can go into things like gerbils or hamsters. People will have a sugar glider or a hedgehog would be another one that used to be really popular but is not so popular anymore. But any of those little critters.
Okay. What are the most popular ones right now?
You know, a lot of people still have hamsters and gerbils. Ferrets are, you know, don't quite fit in a pocket, but they are pretty popular for a small creature.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about, before we talk about maybe how folks can think about the question of choosing the right pet for them and their family, why did you become a vet? What got you interested?
Well, I grew up on a small horse farm in New England, and we had a lot of pets, including, you know, dogs, cats, geese, guinea pigs. I had a turtle and an iguana. And animals will often hurt themselves, injure themselves, and so I always was caring for them. I grew up as an only child, and my mother always said, you know, we need a vet in the family, and you're an only child, so there was that. And then also, I've always loved the fact that I have complete compassion for them. I've always liked medicine and science, but for animals, it's never their fault. It's either nature or something that the owners do. I just have 100% compassion for them and always feel for their situation.
Well, that's great. So you've had a pretty exciting time since you came to Alaska and started to practice and did a little bit of adventuring around before you started with Pet Stop. Is that right?
Yeah, correct. I did work up at Palmer Vet Clinic for a year after graduating from vet school, and then I went on to do relief work and worked in probably about 20 clinics in Anchorage, Eagle River area, and then also would get flown out to Valdez and Juneau, Kodiak, North Pole, areas like that, and fill in for a clinic where the husband or wife, you know, maybe both of them want to get out of town, and so I could live in their home, take care of their pets, run their clinic, that sort of thing.
Okay. Well, that's great. So do you have a specialty currently, or?
I really enjoy exotics. Every veterinarian just has a personal thing that they like to spend time with, and I love having a day where I might see up to 5 species. It just makes my life really interesting, and I've found myself in doing different and exciting things, or things that I found exciting. I do like alternative therapies and trying to find a natural way to do things if possible, and nutritional with omega fatty acids or supplements for animals as if possible.
Wow, that's cool. So is the alternative, is that an expensive route for
healing your pet? It takes a person who's interested in it. It may take a little bit longer than the traditional therapy. It may be used with the traditional therapy. Dr. Todd Palmateer at our clinic does acupuncture and chiropractics, wow, as well as Chinese medicine with animals. And so we have that as an alternative. We have a laser therapy, which works great for a lot of orthopedic diseases, as well as skin infections and trauma. So a lot of those things which can be used in conjunction with traditional medicine.
Okay, so we definitely want to get more into how to take care of your pets. But maybe before we do that, we should talk with our potential pet owners out there, some of those listeners that are maybe considering getting a pet, but are just not quite sure what the first step is. And so how do you really know what pet is the right match for you and your family?
There's a lot of different things that you need to look into when getting a pet. And, it is really sad, I think, when people make the wrong choice, because it can be expensive. It can be really hard emotionally on the owners. Some of the things that you need to look at are, what is your energy level? Do you like to hike and go skiing? Well, you're going to probably want to get a younger dog, something that you can take out in the backcountry with you. Are you less active? Are you maybe older and not able to get around as much? Maybe adopting an older pet is a great option for you. A lot of people in Alaska travel a lot for work. It's great if we could all have pets who want them, but maybe if you're leaving home 2 to 3 weeks out of the month, it might not be the best option for you right now. Unfortunately, money does always take into consideration. A lot of people don't think that they don't budget for whether or not their pets, what if it breaks a leg, or what if it gets hit by a car, mm-hmm, or has an illness, or has a chronic illness like diabetes or cancer. You want to be able to treat the animal and not have it, negatively affect you in a huge way as well. It doesn't, we don't want to be having to make those decisions. And if you can think about them beforehand and have some money available so that if something does happen, you don't have to make those decisions. Housing size is important. A lot of people love to have a large dog, but if you live in a small apartment without a yard, that's not a great option. Or if the size of the pet also takes into consideration for road trips and camping, things like that. If you're going to try to fit the whole family in a car, maybe you don't want to get a 150-pound dog.
That's a great list. And I wanted to point out a couple of resources that I discovered when I was doing a little bit of research for the show today. So on alaskapublic.org, on the You and Your Pets link on Hometown Alaska, you will find several links that I thought were pretty helpful, one of which is a link to Dr. Shannon's current clinic, the Pet Stop. And then there are a few more interesting ones on there for Friends of Pets, the Municipality of Anchorage Animal Care and Control, Alaska SPCA, the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals is that acronym, and the Bird Treatment and Learning Center, which we're going to ask Shannon about in just a second here. But there's also an exciting link to the Anchorage Pet Expo, which I was completely unaware of before looking at this, doing a little bit of research, which is happening on June 9th, 2012. So an exciting event. You should check out that link on our website, alaskapublic.org. And I would also encourage folks that are listening that have questions or would like to share their stories about their pets to call us inside Anchorage at 550-8433, outside Anchorage at 188-353-5752, or email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So we've been talking with Dr. Shannon DeRuzzo about how to choose the right pets and the kind of the checklist of things that you should consider as you're considering getting a new pet. And so there's actually additional information on some of those links too. But I wanted to ask Dr. Shannon, so what are your options for finding a pet? So you've kind of thought, I think I want or a dog or a cat or a rabbit. Where can people go to find animals? What are their options?
Well, Shelley, like you mentioned, those links, the ASPCA, Friends of Pets, Animal Control, rescue organizations. There are a lot of rescue organizations, and some of them are in the lower 48. So if you have a breed that you are really interested in getting, it's nice to give one of those animals a home that has ended up in a rescue. situation. Breeders and pet stores, if you're looking for puppies, we do have a lot of puppies also at Animal Control. And I would always rather have those guys get a home if possible. As well as I just found out, I think there's like 100 cats at the SPCA or at Animal Control right now up for adoption. So we certainly have a lot of animals that, and one of them I'm sure would be perfect for you or your family.
Okay, that's exciting. So I should probably mention that I'm an avid pet owner lover myself, and I got my two Labradors from a great group of folks out in the Matsu Valley. And so we can probably share that link with folks on the website, too, at some point. And they also have adoption as well. So several folks, also me, already have animals at home. And so we were wondering a little bit about the question of, you know, what are the options? I already have a pet. How should I prepare or think about introducing a new animal? So I have a dog at home. I'm going to get a cat. Are there any kind of tips or things that folks should think about?
One thing is I think that a lot of people always assume that the older animal may benefit from getting a younger animal because it's going to make them more active. And sometimes that is the case. But sometimes the older animal may be just too old to really want to do that, and it may be more stressful for them. We see that with dogs, sometimes cats who have been the primary animal in the household, when they get a new one, start hiding more or not eating, not using the litter box, that sort of thing. And so some of the things you want to do is especially with a family, make sure that somebody's going to be the primary caretaker. A lot of times we get pets and somebody feels that, you know, they're spending way more time taking care of this new pet than they thought they were going to. If they're cats, there's definitely protocols for cats, introducing a new cat into a household. Down at the pet stop, we do have a lot of handouts for that. You want to make sure that they both have an area of their own so that they can hide and not have sort of a Thunderdome situation where they're stuck together and end up fighting. Because once cats start fighting, it can sometimes be hard to make them friends later. Make sure that when you introduce dogs or cats, you don't have any treats or toys around. You pick up the food, anything that the animal could associate that's theirs, that they're going to try to protect. Dogs seem to get along together better outside and less in a pack. So if you have two dogs, you know, you're trying to get a second dog, trying to do it in an area that's a kind of even territory for everybody. So, but we do, and as I said, we do have protocols for introducing new dogs and new cats down at the pet stop that you're welcome to come by and pick up at any time.
That's great. So I know that when I got my new dog, my new puppy, so we have a 6-year-old lab, and when I got my new puppy, there were some moments when we had kind of the grouchy old lady syndrome. Mm-hmm. We called her our 6-year-old lab, and she still has those moments because it looks like the puppy likes to just kind of hang out on her collar. Just mm-hmm. wrap her teeth around and hang out there. But I think they've negotiated kind of whose territory is whose, and it's all working out pretty well now. But
yeah, and there will be that time where they're kind of working out who is going to be alpha, and there's a learning curve for what puppies are supposed to be allowed to get away with and how the older dogs should train them. And so a lot of that is natural. But sometimes I think people get, you know, they have a very elderly pet and they bring in a new puppy that may knock the older animal over or do something that could actually injure the dog and just makes their life not quite as good. So things are just to take into consideration.
So one of the things that that I was thinking of last night was that I have friends that have allergies to pets. Mm-hmm. And somehow they're just driven to still get an animal despite the allergy. They're ready and willing to take whatever they need to just to have that animal. And so, I mean, are there pets that are better suited for folks with allergies, or
people who are glutton for punishment,
or that? No. Yeah.
No, I don't think that there are any cats or dogs that would be considered 100% non-allergenic. There are some that seem to be less allergenic for people. But it's still something that if you are choosing to get one of those dogs, then you're going to want to maybe spend some time with them first and see if this is a dog that's going to cause allergies. And if maybe they're mild allergies and ones that are, you know, okay for you to live with, and you'd rather have a little bit of an allergy to have this pet. But it is something to make sure and to bring the whole family involved, because I do see often that one child will have an allergy and now everybody's attached to the pet, and it's really hard to have to get rid of a dog that you and your children have become, you know, really close with.
Yeah, which I did have a friend that had to do that, and that's unfortunate when that has to happen. So I wanted to remind folks that you're listening to Hometown Alaska, and today our topic is you and your pets, and my guest is Dr. Shannon DeRuzzo, who's a local veterinarian here in town at Pet Stop. And we would love to have your comments, questions, hear your stories about your animals, your relationships with your pets. Inside Anchorage, you can call us at 550-8433. Outside Anchorage at 1-888-353-5752, or email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So one of the, actually a question that I had from a friend when she found out that I was doing this show was, you know, she's interested in kind of those different exotic creatures. So when you first hear, oh, pet, people usually think, oh, dog, cat, hamster, gerbil. But that's not her idea at all. Her idea is, I really like rats. And so her question for me was, you know, non-invasive or invasive species. So what are the considerations, or what are some of the things that you should think about by keeping your pet legal and having the right pet?
Well, not every animal is legal in every state. And so if you have any questions about whether or not an animal that you would like to get is legal, I would recommend calling the state veterinarian, and he can let you know what the rules are within each state, because they do change state by state. Basically, this doesn't necessarily apply for rats, but if you have cats or dogs, you do want to make sure that you keep them on the leash. Any cats are known to take down quite a few birds, and dogs can also kill or injure other animals, or just chase them enough that they can cause a lot of stress to other animals. We do see rabbits that either have escaped or have been released that are reproducing at rapid rates and eating a lot of green life and being an invasive species. Spaying and neutering is really important, just in case if your animal does get off the leash. We don't want to have any, we don't need more animals at the shelter. And then one of the things that people never think about is how much our animals are defecating in our yards in the winter. Yeah. And then that can actually affect the water supplies in the spring and how much coliform gets into our lakes and creeks throughout Anchorage. So kind of keeping your yard clean is important.
Yeah, and I have noticed that at dog parks and other parks in Anchorage now, there are those little doggy bags for folks. So someone out there, including the Parks and Rec Department and others, are helping us be mindful of that. Mm-hmm. So that we can take care of that. So we have a caller, Penny from Anchorage is online, and she has a question maybe about dog hospice. Hi, Penny. Welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hi, Shelley and Shannon. I just lost my little Danny dog. I had him for 12 years, and he I tell people he died of a big heart, because he had a bad heart murmur his whole life, and anyway, he had congestive heart failure, and I was with him, and my vet was wonderful, but I knew I didn't want to do any heroics or anything, and is, you know, I'm almost 60 years old. I've had people die, but I've never actually had a living creature die in my lap. And I mean, it was kind of a new first thing for me, and I was up for like a week at night. I was, you know, it was like hospice care, and I really had so many questions. I didn't know what to expect, and I was just wondering if there's a market for hospice care for pets, or, you know, because I could sure have used some help.
There are a lot of resources online. There are some books written about it. We do try to talk with people about it, because it is such a sad thing, and it differs from people where with, you know, it's very uncommon thing with a human where we have to make the decision. And so you, as a as an owner, you have something that has looked to you for all of its care, and you've been its primary, you've been the primary thing in its life forever, and now you're making the decision to end that life. And that is, it is such a hard decision, and it is, you know, people who have made the best decisions sometimes walk away feeling guilt, and it does really can keep you up at night, and I know in my situation as well, I've felt that I've made the right decisions with my pets, but I couldn't help, you know, sometimes thinking about that in the middle of the night. They do have in vet school now. I graduated 10 years ago, and they are now giving us some training in it, and there is more elective training if people would like to do that. Mm-hmm. There are some centers throughout America where you can, I was just looking at a flyer actually this morning about a compassionate, it's not a hospice situation, but kind of resources that you can get. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I don't know of any true hospice situation where they kind of walk you through that as much as they do with humans.
I was thinking that, let's say somebody has a dog and they know they're dying. It's going to take a few days, but they know they're dying. And, mm-hmm. you know, you want to be able to... I started sharing my diuretics with him, and because he was mm-hmm. puffing up, and you know, and I thought, geez, I wonder if he's got stomach acid. You know, I always wondered about do dogs experience reflux, and do they get, you know, that kind of pain and stuff, and it's hard to know. And but I didn't want him to be in discomfort. But it if somebody had could come and sit with me like for an hour or something and say, okay, this is what's happening now. This is, you know, his lungs are filling with fluid. And, you know, I didn't know. I know now what happened to him. But at the time, I was kind of winging it. And
maybe this is your calling.
Yeah. I was just thinking the same thing, Penny, because I was talking with Shannon right before we started the show today about, you know, what is that statistic about how many dogs there are in Anchorage? And it's like for every... I think I heard at one point, like, for every one person, there's, like, two or three dogs. And so it certainly seems like there's a number of folks that are with their animals for a long time and have to go through the same situation. And so, or I bet the folks at Friends of Pets or SPCA maybe have some resources, and maybe you could start that network there.
Well, and I was thinking of children because that a lot of times it's the first time kids ever experience death. And you know, it's a valuable thing. I didn't have that to fall back on. I couldn't think back and go, oh, you know, I didn't grow up on a farm, so I never experienced, you know, an animal dying in front of me. And you know, I've lived my whole life, and it's kind of strange that I haven't been through that.
There are books available, and I know I have family members that have used them because it's things like with children, you don't want to say we put the dog to sleep. Seeing as they go to bed every night, there's certain, you know, phrases and things that we can use with children to make them understand. And some of that is based on also people's religion can take into that account as well. Mm-hmm. So there, you know, definitely is. Every pet owner goes through that at some point, and it is a really, really difficult time for everyone.
Yeah.
So, Penny, I think maybe what we could do is have Dr. Shannon share some of those resources with us, and we could put them online for you to make those available as a start at least.
Okay.
Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you. I think you do. I think people who take care of animals are just the best.
Thank you so much, Penny.
Okay. Thanks.
And we have John online from Tampa, Florida, that has an 18-year-old Chihuahua with a health problem. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, we have a Chihuahua that we inherited about 4 years ago when my mother-in-law passed away. And he's getting up there. He's about 18 years old, and he's having trouble standing sometimes. Sometimes if he falls over, especially on a smooth floor, he can't get himself back up. And I guess we're just wondering, you know, how do you know when it's time, or is there some things we can do to help him?
That is a really good question, and it can be really difficult because I kind of put when there's time into there tend to be two different sort of diseases, and you end up with these chronic, slowly progressive diseases like arthritis, that will, you know, you kind of go, well, is today the day, is yesterday the day, or is tomorrow the day? And it seems like as soon as you schedule the day, they start running around and doing great. And then there are diseases that are really rapid, like a tumor that ruptures or something like that. And it doesn't seem to matter which side you're on. It always seems to be the bad side. It's never an easy decision. There are things, especially for the falling over, pain reliever and anti-inflammatories, which we can give them that may help them get around more. There are a lot of things that older animals, just like elderly people, do experience sometimes anxiety. And so there is a condition called cognitive dysfunction syndrome, which is more like doggy Alzheimer's, where dogs may pace more, they may get disoriented more. There's a medication for that, which is somewhat effective, but I've also found that sometimes a little Valium can take off the anxiety and make them, you know, so that they're not pacing around as much, less likely to fall over. Older dogs can vocalize more, which can be annoying to the people that they live with, as well as stressful. And so sometimes just, you know, I think getting some pain relievers on board, seeing if we, you know, alleviate some of any dog that's 18 is going to have arthritis. And so, you know, alleviating some of that discomfort if we can have a dog that can more easily get around.
And he does have these episodes where he'll just lay on the floor and bark, and we have to sort of guess what it is. Does he want water? Does he want food? Does he need to go out? And or is it that he just can't get up and he wants to get up? So it's kind of hard, you know, and it just breaks our heart to see him in this condition, because he really is part of the family, and you know, we just hate to see him go.
I know, and I really wish that they would learn to talk, too. It would make my job quite a bit easier. because there is often those things that, you know, they can be barking for so many different reasons, and it may be that they need to get up and go to the bathroom. They're going to have to urinate and defecate more frequently when they get older. It could be that they're hungry or thirsty. It may be just an anxiety issue or a pain issue. It may be that doggy Alzheimer's, where older dogs just tend to vocalize more. And so, I mean, what we try to do as veterinarians is try to rule out things that we can address, you know, things that might be life-threatening, try to, you know, deal with quality of life issues, and just trying to figure out, starting to weed through this. All right, older animals tend to be a little bit more flatulent. Are they having gas pains? If you're seeing or noticing that, there are some dietary supplements which sometimes help that. Like the last caller that said, you know, we didn't know if my dog had heartburn. You know, there are some things that we can do to try to weed through the problems and say, okay, well, if we take away some of the pain, does what we're seeing happen less? And that's kind of the best way of starting to rule through that, because unfortunately, I, as some people believe, but I don't have the crystal ball. So,
we had one.
I know, or the dog, you know, the one that could translate, the dog translator.
Well, thank you so much for your call, John.
Thank you,
thank
John.
You for having me.
Thank you. So we're going to take a short break here in just a moment. But before we do that, we did have an email from someone that had the question, how do I get my lab poodle mix to stop barking? She's fine on the leash, but when she's in the house, she barks at every person who walks by that she can see out the window, that is. Same story when she's out in the yard, she can see through the chain link fence. These folks have tried positive reinforcement, negative reinforcement, everything. They don't want to go to a zapper collar. So what do you think? Any thoughts before we take a break?
Maybe if the owners are home or if the owners are not home, it might be a separation anxiety issue. Some of those things are trainers can really be good at kind of differentiating through those things. The barking collar, they do have ones that have a chemical in there, that a citronella collar. So when the dog barks, it sprays citronella in their face. So for the people that don't want to shock their dog, that can sometimes work. In a nice, humane way. The shark collars, sometimes the dogs will bark once and get the point and not bark again with the collar on. The training is a lot of steps, and training can take a while, and so that's something that you'd want to set up with a trainer and go over. And we do have some information at work, but a lot of times for some of these behavioral things, there's not just one thing that's going to stop it. The one thing answer is often the bark collar or the citronella collar. That's sort of the best thing for those if other than doing some real significant training.
That's helpful because we have neighbors in the backyard that have some friendly barkers, but they're barkers nonetheless. So we're going to take a short break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit now about caring for pets in the Great Land. So you're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSK Anchorage.
Listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Shelley Wade. And today we are talking about you and your pets. In the studio with me today is my guest, Dr. Shannon DeRuzzo. And we have just had a really exciting half an hour kind of talking about how to choose your first pet. And we've even touched on some kind of touchier subjects about how to take care of your aging pet. And we were going to focus again then on the caring pets piece, because I think a lot of folks have a lot of questions about this, really, you know, how to begin that process of taking care of your new animal. So maybe one of our first questions for you, Dr. Shannon, is how often should I consider getting my animal a checkup, and kind of what does the checkup include? What does that really mean?
It depends on what age you're getting a pet at, but say if you start with your standard, get a puppy or kitten, you typically want to bring them in at 8 weeks old, and that one we'll do a fecal float for parasites. We do an exam to look for any congenital abnormalities, any hernias, listen to their heart, do an orthopedic exam, especially on some breeds that tend to have more problems with their knees or hips, those sort of thing. Then they get vaccines at 8, 12, and 16 weeks is sort of the average protocol. Anti-parasitic protocols vary throughout clinics. With Alaska is great. We don't have that many parasites up here, but we do have some, and most of them are transmissible to people, so I think it is an important thing to address. As they get older, doing exams on a once-a-year basis is really important. I would say the majority of things that we see are pets that need dental cleanings, and the longer their teeth are go without getting cleaned, sometimes we, you know, end up having to pull teeth, or they end up with pain or gingivitis, tooth root abscesses, things like that.
And you can also, it can affect their overall health as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they can have heart problems and kidney problems. They can go into heart failure from having really bad teeth. As they get older, depending on the size of the pet or the species, it's really good to do blood work on an annual basis. We can, because they don't complain the same way that we do, they will often mask symptoms of illness until it's gone on for quite a while and is a lot harder to treat, and we're a little bit behind the ball. So it's really great to do blood work for older pets, and hopefully it's normal and you just have a great baseline. As they do get older, I always like to talk about things like what are really important for them, like osteoarthritis prevention, glucosamine supplements, things like that, as well as vaccines. The vaccine protocol for rabies is standard throughout the state. The distemper, what's called the distemper parvo shot for dogs, or the FVRCP in cats, is varies amongst clinics, and also the feline leukemia vaccine if they go outside. So the vaccine protocol is usually every 1 to 3 years, depending on the age of your pet and the vaccines.
Okay, so if you have any questions about your pet's care, or you're thinking about getting a pet, We would be very excited to hear your call or your or hear your story. And you can call us inside Anchorage at 550-8433, outside Anchorage at 1-888-353-5752, or email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So we do have an email from someone, and their question is, what about the idea of pet owners having a pet first aid kit? Is that a good idea? And maybe what would that kit include?
It's a great idea. I would say that it's going to include the majority of things would be the same. You can use Neosporin. Band-Aids don't really work very well on a dog, so having some ACE bandage with you or some medical tape is a better idea with some of the non-adhering pads. If your dog gets a laceration, you're not going to be able to put a Band-Aid on them. So getting some of those pads with some tape is a great idea. Having some sort of tweezer or hemostat or something if your dog gets something into its paw.
What's a hemostat?
Hemostat is like a kind of like a very small plier type of thing, something okay. that you could pinch. Or if the dog gets a lot of porcupine quills, you need to bring them into the vet. But if you're out in the back country and your dog just gets one or two quills, you may be able to alleviate that problem before the quills break off. It's not something we recommend. But in a pinch, you may have to do that up here in Alaska. So, but a lot of the same stuff with like Neosporin, things to flush with are great. I love Betadine. I always carry a very small container of Betadine in my pack that I can use for humans or my friendly furry pets.
Okay. Well, that's great. I think maybe one of the questions that would accompany that is, are there common injuries for animals?
The common things that they'd get are lacerations would be a common thing, which is just basically a cut. They are running around barefoot and naked. And so they cut their paws in the winter on ice. They cut them on metal. They run through fences. We had a dog come in with a very small piece of chain link fence adhered to its side. They do occasionally get frostbite. It is pretty rare, but cats can get it on their ears. Dogs with really sort of pendulous ears can get them or on their scrotum. Fish hooks are common more in the Kenai Peninsula, but we do see fish hooks all throughout the state. Had one in the clinic this morning.
Wow.
I saw a dog actually pass from one end to the other a king salmon fishing hook.
Which is like pretty large.
It's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we have a caller online. Eric from Anchorage has a question for us. Oh, nope. It looks like we just lost Eric. So, no, that's interesting. So I think maybe the next question about, you know, so we're talking about injuries, but what about, so we've gotten our vaccinations, we're doing our checkups, but still we get sick, our pets get sick. What are some of the common ailments or issues for animals in Anchorage? And maybe just for our friends that don't have dogs, what are the other kind of common ailments for cats or maybe even the reptiles or some of the less popular animal types that we've been talking about today?
Okay, so I think the one thing that's surprising is how common allergies are for dogs. Somewhat common for cats, but for dogs, they're huge. So we see a lot of allergies in the summer. I see a lot of dermatitis or skin infections from swimming in the lakes around town. We don't have fleas, ticks, or heartworms, so that's nice. They don't have to deal with that. Cats, common ailments would be the most common thing would be an outdoor cat that they fight. And so an outdoor cat is typically more expensive than an indoor cat because throughout the years they are generally going to get bit or unfortunately hit by car. They're pretty smart about it. You do see reptiles in Alaska. There is a reason we don't have any reptiles living indigenously in Alaska. They are very hard to care for. We don't have enough sunlight, natural sunlight in the winter. Our homes, people believe that their homes are warm enough where most of us keep our home at 60 degrees and then have a little light bulb off to the side for their snake or their iguana. And we see a lot of illness due to bone disease from not having enough sunlight, dehydration, that sort of thing. So definitely with the reptiles, it's really hard to adequately care for a reptile in Alaska. And And there are a lot of people who do a great job with it, but unfortunately, a lot of them die because of incorrect husbandry issues.
And you saw, you were sharing with me earlier a story about a reptile, kind of a strange experience. So we definitely know the king salmon hook from end to end is a fascinating story. You shared something else earlier about a reptile that maybe got in a bit of a predicament.
Yeah, you know, you just really never know what's going to happen at the office. And my appointment was a boa constrictor was stuck in a tree, and I didn't really get what was going to happen. And so when they brought it in, they had bought their boa a new stick, or sort of like a root ball to have in the cage that it could crawl around. And snakes have a triangular head, and so it put its head through this hole in this little root system, and it got wedged, and its head swelled up, and it was stuck inside this root ball. So they brought in the snake that was starting to have a little bit of difficulty breathing with a swollen head stuck in a root. So I tried lubing its head up with a bunch of KY jelly and squished its head a little bit and shoved it out backwards and threw away the root ball.
And it got healthy again.
Problem solved.
Great. So we did have a follow-up question. You were talking about the dental question earlier. And, I mean, I know it's pretty expensive to have the whole procedure done to your animal. So the question we had from someone was, should you have that cleaning done once a year, twice a year? What would you recommend?
Unlike people, we don't do the routine cleaning because it involves general anesthesia. And a lot of the times they don't need it. So we do it as needed. And so if the smaller pets, Chihuahuas, poodles, Shih Tzus, those little guys often need dental cleanings more frequently. And so on your annual checkup, we will assess whether or not they need to have a dental cleaning. I do recommend home dental care. We do have a lot of different products, and there are ways that are not so hard to brush their teeth. A lot of people have tried the toothbrush and have not had success with that. And there's a way that I usually just tell people with a little bit of gauze and the dog toothpaste to rub along the gum line. And it a lot of times will get that tartar off. And another thing is if they have an abscess, if you see a broken tooth, we want to take a look at that, because sometimes we can do a root canal, or we can pull the tooth if we need to. Yeah, we do root canals.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that part.
Yeah.
Slash dentist or something. Yeah. So kind of still in the mouth region, I know one of the issues for labs, so I've got these two very ambitious eating labs, so they're hungry 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you know when you're really feeding your animal too much or too little? So it's a question. I've definitely seen folks that feel real comfortable about giving pizza to their dog.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought maybe that's not such a great idea. So is that, what do you think about that? What are the kind of the rules to follow?
The basic rule is if they're too fat, you're feeding too much. If they're too thin, you need to feed more. But aside from that, I think obesity is a huge problem in our pets in the United States, just like it is with people. And so it can be really difficult to tell somebody to feed their pet less when it's not something that's common within the home. But we do have diets that can be that are lower fat or calories that have higher fiber. We do, during your checkup, we'll assess if the animal is underweight or overweight. We rarely see animals that are being fed too little, which is good. It's a nice sign for this country. We do a great job in making sure that they have enough nutrition, but sometimes we love them a little too much, and they do get a lot of extra food and treats. So I used to always, like, if I knew my dog was going to get some salmon that evening, I would just take a handful of food out of his dish, and because he's never going to say, you know, Mom, I've had 100% of my caloric needs today. I don't think I need that extra biscuit. I think I'm good.
So, exactly.
So we need to be that person for them.
So we know salmon is okay. Are there other foods, human foods, that are okay to give your dog or your cat?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So there are, you want to stay away from onions, especially in cats. Not that cats like onions that much, but you want to stay away from onions. Garlic has sometimes been thought of to be a problem. I've never seen it to be a problem. But rhubarb leaves, which would be hard to get your animal to eat, but those can cause issues. Cats are often lactose intolerant, so the whole thing of I found a cat and I want to give it milk usually involves that cat now having vomiting and diarrhea all around your house while you thought you were doing a good thing. So stay away from those if you can. Dogs will love vegetables. A lot of them will, and that can be a great treat for them. There's some controversy with feeding raw food to animals that the bacteria laden, and so some people will do go to like Mr. Prime Beef and get a chicken neck and feed that to their cats. Wow. And cats that are hunters have beautiful teeth usually from their prey, and so there is some risk for that. Cats are more. We're called obligate carnivores. They truly are, like 90% of their diet is typically meat. But they do, a lot of them will like to eat a little bit of, the Prince William Sound prawn, who doesn't, or a little bit of salmon. And you just have to realize the size ratio. You might think you're giving them a little bit, but any time you change their diet, you do risk giving them diarrhea or vomiting. So you want to do baby steps. Some dogs can, just like some people, can consume anything and be fine. And some animals have a huge issue. I've seen a dog that had to do a plasma transfusion on because it had a piece of cheese and got pancreatitis and started to try and die. So you just want to do baby steps with the other types of food and see how your pet is going to respond to it.
Okay. Yeah, we give our animals carrots. And then we discovered that apples, the seeds, are poisonous or not have something in them that is not good for dogs.
Yeah, the other thing too is grapes and raisins. That's a big thing. Big no-no is grapes and raisins.
Why is that?
They can cause kidney failure.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so that leads me maybe to my next question, which is any like really amazing recovery story. So you've spent 10 years doing this. Any animals that have just really amazingly bounced back after they've gone through some pretty significant trauma?
When I think back, it's a lot of the times the things that happen in the beginning of your career that are the most in your memory. And about 10 years ago, I was working at Palmer Vet Clinic, and it was snowing a lot, and I had a call about a dog fight wound. And so I went in, and the dog did not appear to have that many wounds, but a tooth had just punctured its diaphragm, and so all of your intestines shoot up into your chest, and you can't breathe if you can't create a vacuum in your chest. And my technician was ill, and so my lovely boyfriend, Brian Cohn, came in and with some Chinese food, and instead of eating, decided to, I taught him how to run anesthesia, and he ran anesthesia for me, and I had to call my boss twice, who was outside, I think, shoveling snow and have him come and answer some questions for me, because not only had I never done the surgery before, but I had actually never even seen the surgery done. So I wasn't exactly sure if I was even doing it okay. And I recommended that they bring the dog down to Anchorage to have care overnight so that somebody could monitor the dog. And they didn't want to do that. And after about four more emergencies, I decided to go home and go to sleep. And I did not think the dog was going to make it. I unfortunately had to leave it in a kennel just gasping for air and just felt so terrible for the dog, and there wasn't much more I could do at that point. And I went in the next morning, and the dog was standing up, and I opened the cage, and it jumped up on its hind legs, and oh my God, it scared me to death. I did not want it to jump or move or any little suture that I had put in there to rip. And the dog went home and had never looked back, had no idea really what happened. My boyfriend was absolutely amazed that you can take everything out like that and put it all back in and it works.
They are pretty resilient,
yeah. And he did great with anesthesia.
That is an awesome story. So you're listening to KSK Anchorage. This is Hometown Alaska. We are talking about you and your pets today. In the studio with me is my guest, Dr. Shannon DeRuzzo. We would love to get your comments and hear your stories about you and your pets. You can call us inside Anchorage at 550-8433, outside Anchorage 1-888-353-5752, or email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, Dr. Shannon, one of the questions or thoughts that I had is, it's really rough and it can be really difficult as a professional when you have animals and you're a pet owner to exercise your animals and really do a good job at that. And so I was wondering, you know, how often should I do that? So I'm thinking about my two dogs, for example. How long should I exercise them? And what is really a good regimen for them?
Dogs have a lot of energy, especially young ones. I really encourage people to exercise their pet as much as possible. A tired dog is a much better behaved dog. I think the same rule applies for children, I've heard as well. Some of the things that I've done to try to help get them more exercise, because we just can't run 20 miles a day like they can. Well, I guess some people can, but that they can do. And so for an adult dog, I often liked using a backpack and filling it up with some water bottles and giving him more weight. Because if we think about when we go hiking, if you're carrying a backpack, you're expending more energy. The dog has a feeling of that they have a job. My dog was always better behaved when he wore a backpack. In the winter, we can do a lot of ski-joring, which is cross-country skiing with our dogs. So they're utilizing more energy that way. If you have a dog that is a retriever or likes to play fetch, getting into a safe area where that's fenced in and just really having them, you know, run for the ball. Because if they want to exercise, then I would recommend exercising them. It's when they say, okay, that's enough. And we see that more with puppies where people want to take the younger puppy out for long hikes. You really need to kind of go at their level and at their pace. Basically for a dog, a younger dog that doesn't have any problems, as much as you can do is better. And cats, I do recommend using the lasers or trying. There's the little fishing pole with the feathers on the end, anything that you can get them to do to be more active and improve their quality of life. They have seen that with older animals, the same with older people, if you use their mind, it keeps them more active and more interested in life later. So playing things where you hide toys or treats around the house can actually improve their environment, keep them less bored, less destructive, that sort of thing.
That's great. I do have a friend that just recently decided that they needed to get a treadmill
mm-hmm.
for their animal. So they're not avid outside folks.
Yeah.
They're not really excited about this winter idea. And so they thought, hey, for maybe us and the animal, but kind of the animal first, why don't we just get them a treadmill and put them on the treadmill? And does that work?
They actually have, at the physical therapists in town, a water treadmill for dogs.
Cool.
And so it's a treadmill just in a big clear box, and you put the dog in there and fill it up with water, and it provides a nice low-impact activity. They had actually made a treadmill for Maggie the elephant before she left. I don't think she ever really liked it very much. But I think that if you get them used to it earlier on, animals have been trained to do just about anything, and it is a great way to exercise them and low impact as long as you don't scare the heck out of them doing it.
Well, that's great. I know that just making that time, and I know there's a couple of folks in town that even have small businesses where they'll walk your dog for you.
Yeah, and doggy daycare.
Oh, and doggy daycare,
that
of course.
That is excellent. If you have long days, I have had so many people be so happy that the days they put their dog in doggy daycare, their dog comes home and rests and is really attentive and doesn't do as much destructive, doesn't chew or doesn't bark as much like the person whose dog is barking a lot. I mean, some of those are just exercising the dog. I mean, that dog needs training as well, but utilizing doggy daycare is a great option, or dog walkers as well.
Is that expensive? Do we know?
I'm not sure. I don't think, I guess expensive is really
relative.
Yes.
And maybe worth the investment.
Yes. And it may not be something you need to do forever, but if all your life changed and for a short period of time you're going to be very busy, sign the dog up for doggy daycare.
Yeah, I know we even transitioned in our busy household to a dog poop scooper.
Oh, nice.
Because it was just kind of keeping up with that is quite a task in and of itself.
Yeah.
So we do have a question from someone about traveling with pets. What advice do you have for traveling with your pets, and how can you prepare your dog to feel comfortable getting in the crate and then flying on an airplane?
It's good to start that earlier on. And so some people have crate trained their pets already. And so those animals feel really comfortable in the crate, and that makes it quite a bit easier. Having the crate in your house and feeding the dog in the crate can make, you know, bring that crate as a positive connotation. Putting, if the dog's bed is obviously probably too large for the crate, you can put a towel or sheet on the bed so that it smells like the dog, and then when the dog needs to be transported, you can put that in with them so that they have something that is a comfort level and smells like you and home. There are some natural sedatives that can help things. They usually take a couple of days to take effect, like passion flower or valerian, and I believe Petco will, that you can buy the human formulations, and then there are some formulations that are made specifically for pets that are sort of granules that you put on the food that may take the edge off a little bit, but usually it takes a couple days to take effect, so those are nice to start earlier on and make sure that they're fine with your pet. As well as we do use sedatives such as Xanax or Ace Promazine if we do think that they're going to be very stressed on the flight or in the car. In a car, usually if you're doing a long trip, you often can't keep up that degree of excitement for too long. So they, you know, if you're driving for a couple of weeks, they're not going to be that excited for a couple of weeks, maybe for a short period of each time. But, you know, you can also try to get them out and exercise them a little bit. And as I said, just making sure that they feel comfortable with their surroundings before changing everything all at once.
Yeah. So one of the things you said was giving them pills. Any advice on getting a cat or a dog to take a pill?
Dogs are easier than cats. Dogs, they do make these wonderful thing called pill pockets. And they're a little soft treat, and they make them for dogs and cats that you can hide a pill in. And that works for a lot of animals. Peanut butter works really well for dogs as well. For cats, sometimes it just takes learning how to stick it back down in there. They have become a lot more, there's a lot more options now for compounding medication that can be made into a liquid supplement that's either tuna or chicken flavored. And so if you're having problems pilling your cat, or you're afraid of what, you know, I don't want to bring them in because we're just going to have to give them pills, which I haven't had any success with. There are even medications that they've made transdermal, so you can put a little gel in your cat's ear and have it absorbed. So there, almost anything at this point we can have made into a liquid formulation that's nice and tasty for cats, and that is a great option for cats that don't want to eat the pill pockets or are smart enough to get around your sneakiness.
Same. What about traveling with your lizards and your hamsters, gerbils, friends? Any tips there?
You got to make sure that they're going to be safe in the vehicle.
Okay.
And especially reptiles, temperature is really important. I wouldn't drive down the Alcan in the middle of winter with a snake. So,
well, this has been a great hour. Thank you so much, Shannon, for being here today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Shelley. This has been great.
Yeah. If you would like to continue our conversation, please join us on Facebook. You can find links on our new website, alaskapublic.org. Coming up next week on Hometown Alaska, join the discussion on Anchorage Farmers Markets with your host, Peter Dunlap-Scholl. Pat Yak is the Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Shelley Wade.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.